We first met Rabbi Rona Matlow last year when Donald Trump abruptly announced a ban on transgender service members. So this time, we had hoped to delve deeper into some of the issues that came up during our first conversation without the kind of headline-driven pressure that led to that first conversation, to talk about the challenges and the blessings of transgender identity, visibility, and relationships. But it was not to be. News leaked this week of the administration's plans to virtually erase transgender identity from American life. And so with unexpected urgency, I am grateful to welcome Rabbi Rona Matlow back to our program. Rona, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Reverend Goody. It's good to be back, although I wish it was under better circumstances,
yeah,
of course.
Me too. I start out wanting to hear your words about what has happened in this past week.
First, I'll go to what our founding fathers said, which is in the First Amendment, Congress shall neither establish nor prohibit the practice of any religion, which is, of course, the separation clause in the First Amendment. Trump has aligned himself with certain evangelical groups who are dictating how he establishes law in this country. And they are doing so with misguided interpretations of religious law. And in fact, they are saying, this is what Christianity says, but when you talk to Christian groups other than the evangelicals and the Roman Catholics, Presbyterians, but also the Episcopalians, the Lutherans, the Metropolitan Church of Christ, the Universal Church of Christ, the Universalist Unitarian Church, etc., all these other church groups are very open and welcoming of transgender and other queer people, as are most Jewish denominations outside of the Haredi and many Hasidic groups, because they all recognize that queer people, including transgender people, are living the lives as God intended us to live.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I wrote a paper stating that it should essentially be considered an obligation for transgender Jews to transition gender because of the standpoint that transitioning gender is a life-saving act for us.
Mm-hmm.
And in Jewish religion, to save a life is considered an obligation that transcends every other obligation in Torah. And this paper was reviewed by an Orthodox rabbi who I work with in the community. And while he couldn't publicly endorse the paper, privately he told me that he thought it was a very well-written paper, and he agreed with what I wrote.
Hmm.
And when you have that kind of collegiality on this kind of thought, it's very clear that this is understood.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, where it says that God created the human, the Adam, male and female, and you look at the original Masoretic text, it shows very clearly that male and female, zachar unikeva in Hebrew, was written as a single textual unit. The original Adam had male and female characteristics both. The original Adam was androgynous or intersex. The original Adam was not a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that, we derive that God created humans with a broad, multidimensional spectrum of gender. God did not create a binary gender state in Genesis chapter 1.
What are you hearing from the people to whom you minister as a faith leader?
People in the trans community are in shock right now. Colleagues of mine have likened Trump's proclamation to the Nuremberg Laws of 1935. Mm. And we have very real fears right now that this is the beginning of the next Holocaust, except it's going to happen here in the United States. There may be some hyperbole, and certainly things could change on November 6th with the elections if we can flip the House.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, if Democrats take control of the House or the Senate, then Trump doesn't have the mandate that he has right now to run roughshod over the country.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that he is isolating the United States from the rest of the world, and he is basically violating human rights with every proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
He has put tens of thousands of Latino youths in concentration camps, which is reminiscent of what we did with Japanese American citizens during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
During World War II, the United States turned away ship after ship of Jewish refugees that were sent back to Germany, put on trains to concentration camps to be murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And the tone from Washington, D.C., right now is very much alike the tone of Washington, D.C. during that time period.
Mm. We have a lot of listeners who hunger for a way to stand for justice and dignity, specifically in solidarity with transgender persons right now, because that's the group that is suddenly in the crosshairs of a government that is supposed to represent all of us. So I would really appreciate you giving us some clear, specific direction on how to do the right thing in this situation when given the opportunity to do so in a work or a social or a church setting or whatever. Someone says they are transitioning. What should I understand? How can I be of service? How can others be of service?
That's a great question. The first thing is to welcome them into the fold. Do not chase them away. Ask questions. Try to learn and understand. If they don't have anybody available in their congregation who understands the process, they can reach out to experts at organizations like the National Center for Transgender Equality. They can refer the person to the Trans Lifeline for individual support. They can, of course, go to my website, rabarona.us, for resources.
Mm-hmm.
In many locations, there are Planned Parenthood clinics where people can get support. If they can't find a trans-friendly therapist in their area, they may be able to go to breakthrough.com and find a trans-friendly therapist online. Additionally, one thing that's absolutely vital right now is that our representatives and senators need to be flooded with letters from every congregation in the country opposing this action by the Trump administration, opposing these actions by Health and Human Services and by the Department of Education, redefining Title IX to state that gender is defined by birth sex. And that's just flat out scientifically wrong. The fact is that there are so many cases where birth sex does not define gender that it just proves their flat out scientific ignorance when they state that, aside from the question of transgender identity, that it's just foolish for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. What words or actions would you caution against?
Never misgender somebody. Don't presume to know who they are. Be very careful about the language that you use.
Mm-hmm.
If you knew who they were before, be very cautious not to dead name them. In other words, use their previous name.
Mm-hmm.
If you knew this person growing up as Johnny, but they identify as Sarah now and use she, her pronouns, please be very careful to always call her Sarah and never refer to him as Johnny. It may be very tempting to use and very easy to slip and say him because the person is 6'2" and weighs 300 pounds. But if the person identifies as Sarah and uses she, her pronouns, please call her Sarah and refer to her with she, her pronouns.
What do you wish you as a transgender person had known at the beginning of your journey that you now know?
I wish that I had known my identity when I was younger, actually. In a lot of ways, not knowing and not transitioning until I was 55 made the transition easier. But I really do wish that I had been more aware of my gender identity when I was younger because the signs were there, but I never understood it. And what's really ironic is, as a high school teenager, I knew about transgender people like Renee Richards and Carolyn Cossey and Wendy Carlos, but I didn't realize that I was like them. But, you know, I used to cross-dress, and I used to remove body hair. And when I was very young, even like in first grade, I used to always hang out with the girls. But I never understood why I was like that. And it would have been nice to have that understanding. It would have been really wonderful to have lived the life of who I am instead of a miserable life of who I was. In my case, because I'm retired and because I have a very wonderful family, it was very easy for me. And because I'm on Medicare and I came out during the Barack Obama era, it was very easy for me to get transgender health care coverage. I didn't have any of the workplace issues that so many people have. I didn't lose my employment. I didn't lose my health care coverage. I didn't lose my family. I didn't lose my marriage. My wife has stayed by me. In a couple of weeks, we'll have been together for 35 years. You know, my life has been wonderful. But at the same time, you know, I'm suffering from very severe military injuries. And that's a dichotomy. Being permanently disabled with these injuries has made my life very miserable. But at the same time, it facilitated a very easy transition. So it's kind of a strange split.
There are challenges to every relationship, but there are particularly potential complications in romantic relationships. What do you wish all people understood about those kinds of connections?
Well, sure. My wife did not sign up to be a lesbian. She is heterosexual. And this is a challenge that every transgender person who is married goes through along with their partner if they decide that they stay married. Because now all of a sudden, the cisgender partner finds themselves in a homosexual relationship, which is a very strange situation for them to be in. And, you know, before gender surgery happens, the body parts are still the same, and so sexual function may be the same. But after the person has gender-confirming surgery, of course, sexual function is very different. All of this has to be negotiated, and communication is the key skill. Some couples move to an open relationship where, you know, if the wife of a transgender woman still needs to have sex with a male, she may take a male lover. It just depends on, you know, various different accommodations that are worked out.
We don't have any idea, of course, about what the next several weeks or several months will hold. But I want you, if you will, to talk to our listeners about whatever else comes to your mind as you look at what may be a challenge during these weeks and what's most important for people to keep in mind if we go into a very difficult situation.
Okay, sure. Well, I have several bits of wisdom. Number one is vote. Most places have gone to mail-in ballots. Please get your ballots filled out and mailed in well before the November 6th deadline so that your ballots get into your county registrar in time to be properly counted so that they don't become provisional ballots or filed away in the circular file or whatever, because your vote needs to count. So please, please, please vote. Make your vote count. Be thoughtful, especially about the national candidates, your governors, your state legislators. Those are the types of people who have broad impact on your life. So do that. If you are afraid of what is coming down the pike, please do not decide to go out and buy a handgun. While I don't necessarily take a stand one way or the other on Second Amendment gun ownership issues, I tell people that unless you have been through a specific combat training course, having a gun is a liability, because if you go up against somebody and you have a gun and don't have combat training, that gun is going to be taken from you and it becomes a liability instead of a self-defense weapon. And then you are dead from your weapon. Mm-hmm. If you want to have something less lethal, like a stun gun or an ASP or something like that, if those are legal in your jurisdiction and your police department licenses those, that's fine. But do not get guns right now. I think that's just a very bad idea. Protests are great. But the biggest thing is let your senators, let your representatives know how you feel about what's going on in Washington. And when there are protests, whether in Washington or whether they are at your local capitals, please attend those. Many religious groups are, in fact, planning actions and carrying out actions regarding these issues right now. The rub is that small groups of evangelicals have the ear of President Trump, and President Trump, of course, has the control of the Pentagon, and so that's what makes him so dangerous. And so we have to do whatever we can to try to influence the Capitol to keep the president under control, because, of course, we cannot influence the Supreme Court, and we cannot influence the president. So we have to control Congress, and the only way we can do that, of course, is by affecting what happens at the ballot box on Tuesday, November 6th.
Rabba Rona Matlow is America's only transgender nuclear-qualified Navy veteran rabbi. You can follow her work at rabbarona.us. Rona, thank you so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio, and we'll look forward to the next time that we can have a conversation.
Thank you, Reverend Getty. Have a wonderful day.
This conversation is a part of Whosoever You Love, our semi-monthly series affirming the worth and full value of LGBTQ persons within and beyond religion, supported by the Arcus Foundation, dedicated to the idea that people can live in harmony with one another and the natural world. Learn more about Arcus and its partners at arcusfoundation.org and find additional resources on Whosoever You Love at stateofbelief.com.